Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Gold with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have as my guests Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman, who are the authors of The Deja Vu Enigma, A Journey Through the Anomalies of Mind, Memory, and Time. Marie and Larry are authors of 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomena, and The Resonance Key. And they're founders of theparaexplorers.com and have been on many radio shows. Jones is also the best-selling author of 2013, The End of Days or A New Beginning, and Science. I've actually read Science. Flaxman's the founder and senior researcher of the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies team, and both are involved in many paranormal research organizations. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Well, you're welcome. Nice to be here.
Thanks
well, I really enjoyed your book. It was something of a compilation of the work of many of the people I've interviewed on the show. I've done the show for about 17 years and interviewed an author a week during that time.
Oh, wow.
many of the people you've mentioned in the book, their research and everything, I've had the pleasure of speaking with. But you've done a great, job of compiling evidence in many, many different areas and then tying it all together to try to understand consciousness, which is what we're all trying to understand.
Right, right.
So yeah. Would you like to tell a little bit about how you all came to write the book?
Well, we had done two books and had, I think we needed a third book for our publisher, and we actually were tossing ideas around, and it was our publisher who suggested that we maybe look into deja vu as mm-hmm. being a topic that we wanted to write about. We really didn't think there was all that much out there. So we said, okay, let us give this a shot. And we did some research and found out that there's quite a bit of scientific research into deja vu and memory in the human mind. And it just sort of took off from there as being a book about the power of the human mind and how little we know about it. So deja vu was sort of the entree to a bigger book about, you know, the mysterious powers of our mind and our consciousness and even the brain, how it functions. And so that's how it came about.
Well, I think deja vu is interesting to look at because it's so common. You say that about two-thirds of people experience deja vu, is that right?
That's according to polls, and I would probably figure just about everybody does. I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who said that they haven't had deja vu.
No.
Well, if you want to understand the consciousness, you have to look at anomalies.
Right.
And deja vu is a very common one. It's one that not everybody's had a near-death or an out-of-body experience or slowing down of time,
exactly.
Time storm. I just love some of the things in your book. It's great. So this is a good starting point for everybody to understand. And really, if you have anomalies in a theory, then you don't have the theory. I mean,
right.
The theory has to explain all the anomalies
right.
if you're looking at it from a scientific standpoint. So I think deja vu is a wonderful place to start because everybody can relate to it, and yet it really does put the question on the table, what the heck's going on with time-space?
Right. Well, I like your comment about how, you can't have a theory and then just sort of brush the anomalies under the rug because I think science tends to do that with quote-unquote paranormal phenomena. It's like, okay, well, that doesn't fit our theory, so we're just going to ignore it for now.
Well, what's worse is they say that other people's perceptual reality doesn't exist, which
right,
I think
exactly.
is insane. I mean,
it can
really
hurt your head
insane.
Thinking about that stuff, yeah.
But, I think science, I come from a family of scientists, and I think science just doesn't have enough dimensions to explain everything.
Right. But I think it'll get there.
I hope so.
Every day there seems to be some really cool news story coming out of the scientific community. And there was one today that the Big Bang may have been one of many, many, many cyclical Big Bangs. And, we don't know anything. I mean, I think we really need to admit that to ourselves. We don't know anything.
I interviewed Lavalette, who has some interesting evidence against the single Big Bang Theory.
Right, right.
I mean, he really has done some research.
I think I've got a few of his books, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was, you know, I don't even prescribe, you know, I definitely don't prescribe to Darwin by itself. I don't prescribe to the Big Bang by itself.
I mean, there's always something missing, a missing
link.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Laszlo's theory of the multiverse is actually a very good one. But there's many, you basically have to take all of the theories and then see if they explain the anomalies.
Exactly.
That's exactly what, I'm sure you guys as researchers, are hot on the trail to do that.
Yeah.
Well, you want to tell me a little bit, Larry, you want to tell me a little bit about your paranormal research efforts and how it contributed to the book?
Well, and, you know, and Marie's a big part of that, too. But my organization is probably one of the largest paranormal groups in the country. We're certainly the most well-funded. We are 100% science-based. I mean, you hear that mm-hmm. term kind of bandied around a lot with different paranormal groups and stuff. But, you know, my group is probably one of the few that actually is. You know, as far as coming from the perspective of what that was able to contribute to the book, you know, other than kind of methodologies, some of the research that I've done personally, there's not a huge amount of crossover between the two. I think our previous two books probably had a little bit more contribution from that side more than anything else. But, you know, everything is so related anyways. I mean, like you guys were saying, mystery, you know, there are so many unknowns, and science tends to kind of throw away the things that are unknown and doesn't really take them serious. And that's kind of where I like to come in is take those things that traditional science isn't taking seriously and try to apply science to it and see if there is some type of a connection.
So I guess we probably ought to just start with defining déjà vu,
mm-hmm.
because there's some things that look like déjà vu but aren't. Is that right?
Yeah, the general description is really quite simple. It's just
mm-hmm.
The feeling or sensation that you have done something before when you know you're doing it for the very first time, and it can be having a discussion or being in a particular location or hearing a song or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like, oh my God, you know, I did that before, been here before, but you know, this is the very first time this has ever happened. So that's the simple foundation for déjà vu. And then people have different experiences that are sort of attached onto it. They can have a déjà vu in a particular location and have a flash of themselves in that location maybe thousands of years ago, you know, sort of a past life glimpse.
Mm-hmm.
Or we had one gentleman write us a story that had happened to him where he had a dream about a car accident, and then 2 weeks later was in that car accident, and right before it, though, had a déjà vu. And it was enough to kind of snap him into awareness so that he was able to avoid being hit.
Right.
So there's, you know, really interesting little anomalies even attached to this anomaly, which really takes it out there even further. And those are the things that, you know, like we said, there's a lot of scientific research that's been done into déjà vu, but that's the kind of stuff that they can't explain. They can't touch that. They can tell us what parts of the brain are involved. They can even trigger it
mm-hmm.
in a laboratory situation, but they can't explain how it happens in a natural setting when you're just walking along, and they can't explain some of the other things that are associated with it.
Well, before we go into that, I wanted to share something that I've noticed. I'm a plastic surgeon, and sometimes we're dealing with something that's never been done before, and so we got to figure out how to do it.
Right.
And sometimes you know that before you get in the operating room. So a lot of times, several times as a matter of fact, I've gone into the dream state, and I'm pretty good at lucid dreaming, so I remember a lot of my dreams. I go into the dream state, and I do the surgery about 6 different ways. And then when I wake up, I know how I'm going to do it. But the interesting thing is I've never had a déjà vu attached to that. So when I was doing it, I had a déjà vu. But I thought to myself, maybe this is what a déjà vu is, except you forgot that you did it 6 different ways.
Huh. Well, I would hope that you wouldn't have a déjà vu during surgery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think
you know.
I ever have during surgery. But, you know, maybe it's because you're totally focused during surgery.
Yeah, yeah. You know, deja vu, one of the things that we found is that it happens more when people are really exhausted.
Yeah, and relaxed.
And the funny thing is, so does, yeah, sleep paralysis does too. So
right.
Exhaustion seems to trigger, I don't know, something in the brain. People have all kinds of weird things happen, but, you know.
I had a patient, I deal with a lot of patients with infected breast implants.
Uh-huh.
And because they have biotoxins, it acts as a neurotoxin and it depletes neurotransmitters out of the brain. And one of my patients had sleep paralysis so bad that she couldn't function at all, and she was terrified to go to sleep. So I went and looked it up, and I put her on some neurotransmitters, and it totally went away.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, stress probably depletes neurotransmitters.
Right.
And then that leads to sleep paralysis and other, you know, I guess diseases or disease states when you're trying to sleep.
Yeah, and that's a creepy one, too. I mean,
it is. It's very scary for her.
And if you have it a lot, yeah, you really do not want to go to sleep.
Oh, she's exhausted. She couldn't function.
Yeah. Wow.
And many of my patients have those neurotransmitter problems, so they can't sleep very well.
Yeah.
And we find that if you just replace the neurotransmitters, they can sleep a lot better. They don't wake up so much, and they, you know, they fall asleep better.
I know a lot of people with insomnia that would like to get a hold of that.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Well, there's probably about, you know, 20 different causes of insomnia. And, like, medicine just slams everything with Ambien.
But it works,
but it's addictive, so it's a problem. But when you get really, really bad neurotransmitter problems, you can't. Ambien doesn't even work.
Right.
So we really need to study it from a scientific standpoint.
Yeah, and it does seem to be an epidemic, sleep issues. But, again, I think it's stress. It's just overload.
Yeah. So deja vu. Tell us a little bit about the research that's been done in this, especially the inducing of it. I believe it was in the hypothalamus. Wasn't that where they stimulated?
Right, one of the areas. Also the temporal lobe. Most of the research was being done for another reason. In other words, it was usually involving memory studies,
right,
trying to figure out how the human brain processes and retains and recalls memory. And deja vu would be triggered as a sort of a side effect. So it then became, wow, hey, you know, what did we do? Let's do it again. And that became the focus of study. But we found it, you know, a lot of study going on in England and overseas, but right here in America as well, and still going on. There are some laboratories that are completely devoted. There's one in Switzerland, I believe, where they actually have people go and you stay there and you stay for a few days, and they do all kinds of deja vu studies, and it's obviously most people think of it as a trivial experience, but apparently there are a lot of scientists that don't.
Well, maybe they're about to expand their view of the world.
Yeah, I would hope.
So you mentioned DMT, the spirit molecule, is also at least being associated with deja vu?
Well, yeah, Rick Strassman, that his experiments with DMT were one of the situations where deja vu was a side effect for quite a few people. So he started to look for an association. And it's really all about the brain and what parts of the brain do what. And deja vu, obviously, is linked with all of the memory portions of the brain. But it's also linked with the part of the brrain that causes grand mal seizures and epileptics. And right before you have a grand mal seizure, apparently there's some type of oral sensation where the person feels like they're in a very, very deep, intense deja vu experience. So there's those two links. And that part of the brain is also associated with poltergeist phenomenon.
Really?
Yeah. So the brain, I mean, here we go. We have this incredible mechanism in our own bodies that we're still trying to figure out.
So am I to understand that if they stimulate this part of the brain, people have poltergeist phenomena, or while they're having it, they measure activity there?
I don't think, Larry, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they've ever been able to stimulate poltergeist phenomena, but what they've done is in mainly young girls that have been associated with it. They were William, I forgot his last name, I just completely spaced. There's a great book out about a young girl named Tina who went into a laboratory and literally let them study her while she was having her poltergeist events. And that was the same part of the brain that would light up during a grand mal seizure. And Dr. Barry Taff is a wonderful resource. You probably have interviewed him for the association of poltergeist phenomena with the temporal lobe region, and how in 99% of the thousands of cases that he looked at, there was that association with that part of the brain being overactive.
And it seems that especially teenagers and people in their 20s have more commonly things going on in the temporal lobe. I interviewed Dr. Amen. He wrote a book called Healing Depression and Anxiety, and he was doing spectra scans on different people with depression and anxiety. He found that especially teenagers and 20-year-olds would have light up the temporal lobes during the spectra scan, and if you gave them Prozac, they would try to commit suicide.
Yeah. You know,
and fascinating.
It is, and you got to wonder, too, how much of it is hormonal.
True. You've got all the hormonal stuff going on.
Right.
There, too. But the temporal lobe is very interesting. It's something that I guess you would expect maybe some aberrant activity in the temporal lobe to create problems in time, since it's called the temporal lobe. I don't know. Is it called the temporal lobe for some reason?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that is where we process the, I don't want to use the word sensation, it's not the right word, but the perception of time, maybe. Larry, do you agree?
Yeah, I'd probably call it, the same thing, maybe our own clock.
Yeah. It's even got a paranormal association.
Right. You know. Have you, either of you, read about the WebBot predictions?
Yeah, I did, when I was writing 2013.
It's very interesting because the WebBot predictions are now predicting these time storms. I mean, I didn't have a name for it until I read your book, but they're saying that you'll be walking in a parking lot, say going toward the you'll park and there won't be any cars in the parking lot, and you'll be walking toward the store, and then when you come out, like 5 minutes later, the entire parking lot will be full of cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Larry, sounds like your experience with not being able to find the parking lot. Remember?
Yeah, that was a little, but that was more of a time loss incident, I think.
Yeah,
well, this is time loss. I mean, or time,
time distortion,
gain.
Maybe.
Yeah,
you know,
it kind of sounds like time distortion, maybe. Yeah,
right.
That's really interesting. I've actually never heard of that. What did you guys call it? WebBot.
The WebBot. Yeah, when
yeah,
I did
the
2013, that was really hot, and it makes predictions off of MEMS and tipping points and trends, and it sort of looks at everything that's being searched for and discussed over the internet, and then it makes predictions for society as a whole, for cultures. It's really cool. I mean,
it's also
scary.
Yeah, it started in 1996 and predicted to the day 9/11, and predicted to the day the stock market crash in global economic problem in mid-September 08,
right,
to the day, you know.
It's
the bigger the
scary
event, the more likely it is to be able to predict it because
exactly
of the technology.
It's not
prophecy.
No,
what it
it's
is,
looking for
it's,
patterns. And,
yeah,
and
it's pattern
we've written
recognition
about that a million times. It's really cool, Larry. And Larry and I are supposed
to... Well, I'm Googling it right now, actually.
Yeah.
Googling it.
Our next book is going to be on time travel, and so anything that has to do with time.
Right.
You know, time storms, time shifts, time distortion.
I want to interview you on that book because I'm fascinated by time stuff.
I think that's
going
to explode.
Okay, so I found some information about it, but who actually does the predictions? I mean, is it like some kind of a program, an algorithm?
It's a program, right. It's a program that was developed to do it, and I think Cliff offered it to the government, but they turned him down, but they're kind of doing their own stuff now.
Yeah, they probably got a real sophisticated one.
Yeah. But it's interesting because they said that there was a major tipping point from the 8th of November to the 15th. And some of the people in the military have told me that during that time period, we potentially had an EMP hit the Carnival cruise ship.
Right.
We had two missiles off the coast of the U.S., and a Chinese sub surfaced right in the middle of the part of the Armada that was out there with Obama during his trip.
Right.
And so they showed us three times that they can get to us, because the sub was well within torpedo range and has nuclear capability, and both missiles had nuclear capability.
Right. Well, yeah,
and
I find all this
the
timing is just really interesting.
Yeah, the guy who was in the military told me that China was pissed because we devalued the dollar some more by printing money, and probably devalued their money 20 to 30%, and they were not very happy about that.
Yeah.
And then the WebBot project, Larry, just so you know, you can read about it, I'm sure you will. The WebBot said that Obama would have to make some very, very important decisions during this time, and that this was actually 10 to 100 times more important than 9/11 was.
Yeah.
And yet we haven't seen any of it on the regular news.
Oh, you won't. No, there's little news about how China is not putting pressure on North Korea. We've got a warship out there, and they're mad at us.
I know.
You have to kind of look for it.
Can you imagine what would happen if we actually, cut off, went to war with China, or
I remember when I was with them? You know, when I was a little kid,
we don't have to make factories.
My dad told me when I was a kid that China was going to nail us. This was back in the 70s. I was really young.
A lot of people have said that.
Yeah, my dad had been dispatched. My dad was working for the government.
Mm-hmm.
He's a geophysicist, and he would be sent around the world
mm-hmm.
whenever there were major earthquakes to see if they were really underwater nuclear detonations.
Really?
Yeah, and it was all top secret. We'd have FBI guys show up at the door. They would handcuff my dad to them with his briefcase and materials.
Mm-hmm.
Take him to the airport.
Oh, my goodness.
He'd come back like 3 weeks later. And I was really young at the time, and he said, everybody was talking about Russia, and he said, no, you wait. 30,
China.
40 years from now, China's going to get us.
I was in the military for a long time. I was in the Air Force, and I used to go on deployments, tri-service deployments, for months at a time. And I have a theory, and I don't know whether it's right or not, but Chinese chips are in everything in the military.
Huh.
I mean, think about all
they make everything.
Think about
right.
where the chips are coming from China in our government and in our military industrial complex. Now, the Chinese think ahead. The Chinese think ahead hundreds of years, whereas we don't even think ahead 2 weeks.
We're too focused on Black Friday.
Isn't that terrible to say that?
It is.
But what if our technology can be disabled?
Yeah. I think we've gotten way too comfortable and
dependent
on technology. We all have.
We're way too dependent on it, too. And like you said, Larry, I was reading The Economist, and they said there's an economic tsunami coming, and you'll walk into Walmart, and you think you're walking into Neiman Marcus.
Oh, no. It'll be interesting.
I thought that was really good. That was about a year and a half ago in The Economist.
Yeah, it's just some interesting times. But at the same time, if you watch what's happening with science, with scientific discoveries, there's all kinds of really interesting stuff popping up at the same time that... Would you say that?
You know what we've been talking about lately about dreams and stuff?
Uh-huh.
The thing is, sometime in 2011, WebBot predicts an extraterrestrial alien visit, which could lead to even more unfolding for the future. It also goes on to say that in 2012, a large amount of the population will not survive due to pandemics, economic failure, a breakdown in the healthcare and government, and unknown energies from space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we think the Disclosure Project is about 8 months away.
Yeah,
it'll be very interesting to see whether it's the government disclosing, which I doubt. I was stationed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and I've met a lot of people that saw things. I really did. They had no reason to lie to me, I'll tell you that.
You can't keep a lid on something that big
forever. No, too many people are involved. Way too many people are involved. And in fact, I just watched a whole episode on UFO Files on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I don't usually watch UFO files, but because I spent so much time at Wright Pat, I thought I might be interested to know what was real.
What they were
going
doing
on
while you were there.
But we think the disclosure project may be about 8 months away. The question is the government going to disclose it, or is someone else going to disclose it?
Yeah, exactly.
And if someone else, are they of this planet?
Right, right. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And it's funny because Larry and I were talking about how, I mean, my son even, people are having a lot of dreams about, you know, aliens and the media, the movies and the TV shows are just going through the roof. There's been this
I've got a great book for you all to read.
What is it?
It's called Alien Mind. And it's a book that was written by an investigative journalist who spent, I think, 10,000 hours, something like that. I might be misquoting him, interviewing the aliens that have been working with our government. And there's three different levels of them. And he says one level lives for 11,000 years, but then the higher level lives for 11 million years. And the entire book was so funny because that he said in the course of civilization, there's two things that are very important. The first is the discovery of electrogravity. And electrogravity is like free energy. And the second is where we start cloning people rather than, it's asexual reproduction rather than sexual reproduction. So those are the two most important things. If electrogravity is misused, then you can burn out your sun, which is supposedly what happened to the Greys. But he talks a lot about Tom Bearden's work in there. So I decided to call Tom Bearden up. He lives in Alabama. And Tom hadn't heard of the book. He hadn't read the book. I said, well, you need to read the book. You're extensively quoted in it.
Oh, great.
So I connect people.
There you
I
go.
Connect
yeah.
people to the books that they're in that they don't
that
know.
They're in, but they're
so I
got to
call Tom
in.
Back and ask him what he thinks of the book.
Who was the author? Do you remember?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
Okay, it's called Alien Mind.
There's two Alien Minds. It's the one that has the picture of the alien with the galaxies and stars in the face.
Okay. I just got sent a few books to read on the same kind of subject matter, and I didn't ask for them. They were sent to me to review.
Right.
So, yeah, definitely on the minds of a lot of people.
It is. And like I said, my experience with the military and the people I met at Wright Pat, I've always known that there is a great deal that the government is not, you know, fessing up to. And you know, perhaps for good reason.
Right. Well, look at the panic that happens with something small.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But in any case, I think that the lid's going to get blown off of that. I mean, Edgar Mitchell has already, of Noetic Science, has already on national TV stated that our government is involved since, I think, 1954 with alien technology and reverse engineering of a lot of stuff. It makes sense. I mean, if you look at technology and how it's grown. But this is exciting stuff with the potential of actually understanding that we're part of a greater galactic.
Well, hopefully that's how the majority of the population will take it as something
hopefully.
Exciting.
Hopefully
the
disclosure will be a positive thing. And
Independence
Day is not going to end up coming true.
Will Smith will be, I mean, that's true. That's that, you know, and there's all these conspiracy people saying, well, the government is evil for not telling us. But you know what? Maybe they understand human behavior better than we think they do. And
or it could also be, Marie, maybe they know something about motivations that we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the whole disclosure thing, you know, it hasn't come to this point because it is a bad thing. Maybe there's really not
That's
a positive
very true,
thing,
and they want to avoid us killing each other before the aliens can even get to us, which tends to happen. I mean, there's all these different scenarios, and it's just, but when you see some small event occur where people go into a complete panic and end up killing each other, you really do wonder if something that big were to be disclosed. You know, it would be anarchy. I mean, I don't think the military would be able to get a grip on any of it. I don't care.
That's
it's called martial law. Nobody's going to pay attention. There are not enough soldiers and, you know, I'm sorry, but martial law ain't going to work when the millions of people are saying, screw you, we're hitting the streets. You know?
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, but perhaps maybe we are, and since you wrote your book, you probably understand, we're in a consciousness shift.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we probably won't have disclosure until we're at that level where we can handle it.
Yeah.
Things really,
really
do work out for the best.
Larry and I have been really compelled to write these kinds of books, too, and maybe that's part of what the process is that
it's educational.
Let people find a way to expand their minds, raise their consciousness, get to the point where they're ready to accept more, and do it in little increments that they can handle.
Right, right. That's very important.
Wow.
We kind of got off track there, but that's good.
But it's all related. You know, it really is. I mean, it is.
Well, I was talking about the web bots having predicted these time storms, and I definitely want to interview you in your time book because that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So if indeed we are entering a time where these time storms are going to be more, they're kind of going to be like deja vu, is what they're saying in the web bot information. That because really they haven't been. I mean, not that many people, except for those perhaps experiencing alien abductions, have had these time storms or time warps that were so. I mean, most people don't have missing time.
No, this is great. You know, Jenny Randles has done some good work with that. She's got a book out completely about time storms. People in Brazil, England, Chile, different countries that have experience exactly what you're talking about, and it's a great book. She writes a lot about time distortions, and I can definitely see it's like the veil is getting thinner between realities, and more people are going to be experiencing different shifts in perception and different experiences of time, and it kind of makes sense with everything else that's going on that we're being parts of our brain are being expanded. Opened up, activated, if you will.
Larry, I'm sure in your studies of paranormal phenomena, you've looked at the electromagnetic, perhaps electromagnetic phenomena that occurs in the Bermuda Triangle. It has caused death. I mean, that's probably the best place to study time loss because, like, a whole airplane had it. Everybody on the airplane had it.
Airplanes, boats, there's been tons and tons of experiences in that particular area.
And that's probably a great study of how there's a dimensional, what would you call it, the dimensional wormhole, perhaps, that they enter into and then exit out of. I mean, if
you know, what's really interesting, though, about it is, okay, so there's supposedly there's been things happening for hundreds of years in that location, but why does it seem like it's such a random occurrence? In other words, what would actually, to me, I think probably the more interesting facet of that whole thing is what actually is the mechanism that causes the experience to happen in the handful of times that it has happened?
Right.
In other words, why does it happen
one day, not
the next? Is there some sort of a precursor that actually could be studied right before the thing's about to happen?
There's a theory that it's electromagnetic flux from a giant crystal.
It's a part of a crystal that broke off from the Atlantean civilization, things like that. And, you know, and I'm not trying to debunk anything because I certainly, you know, I'm an explorer and I love exploring things. But there also hasn't been any recent, at least publicized, disappearances within the Bermuda Triangle. So it seems like since the advent of modern GPS and locational equipment that there has been a lot less of the mysterious disappearances than there used to be. So, you know, maybe that's part of it as well. Maybe, you know, as we've gotten a little more technological and our GPS, our ability to find ourselves has increased, you know, maybe that's part of it too.
But I'm going to argue the opposite of that, that if it's some kind of geophysical or environmental cause, I mean, the oceans are changing. So perhaps, you know, some of the more natural changes that are occurring were involved with whatever was happening, and now they're not happening as much. I mean, it could be something as simple as nature was doing
it,
you know, nature was doing a particular thing, and now she's not doing it. And you know, it's like the Earth is always moving. Tectonic plates are always rubbing up against each other. But why, you know, why are we not constantly having earthquakes?
Right.
Maybe
right.
it has something to do with that, too.
Could,
and maybe whatever was there went away.
It's, well, it's true. I mean, it's very true. I was watching, I think it was Ancient Aliens or something like that.
Ancient Astronauts, I think it was on the History
yeah,
Channel.
It was,
yeah,
it was a pilot who was in the Bermuda Triangle area that actually entered one of these holes, and he described, it was a while ago, like you said, it was
yeah.
probably 40 years ago, but he described the spinning of it, and he got
mm-hmm.
dizzy, and it was a definite wormhole type thing, and then he flew out of it, so he didn't, you know, disappear
right.
Completely. One of my neighbors, this is very interesting, one of my neighbors in Ohio when I was in the military, we were all sitting around. We'd all gone to the same psychic, which was very interesting. She was very good. And then for the next 6 months, we sat at the pool and told how all of the predictions came true. It was great. But she said she said her husband had been flying a plane in the Bermuda Triangle and disappeared. And the psychic had said he wasn't dead. He was just in another dimension. And she said, I know that's true because I can feel he's still alive, and I hope the bastard doesn't come back.
Oh, no. Oh, so it's a good thing.
Isn't that funny? But she said, I would know if he was dead, and he's not dead. I mean, I think that's fascinating.
Oh,
so it could be that actually the people that disappear and don't come back are actually not dead. They're
somewhere else.
They're
that was
somewhere
a,
else.
Yeah.
That's
Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the great scene where they bring them back and they're just sort of stunned and looking around.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
then some
knows.
People, like this pilot, did get, he didn't stay in the wormhole. He left it. But isn't it interesting? I mean, his perceptual reality that he was going down this spinning hole
right.
that was closing in. And I think your book mentions that, too.
I did, yeah. I wrote about it in Science. I think his name is Bruce something. Bruce
right.
McDonald or whatever. But, yeah. And, you know, but like Larry and I write about, if something was going on naturally or environmentally that affected his brain, to give that spinning sensation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he
right.
could have perceived this experience all within the mind,
right.
which doesn't
oh,
make
absolutely.
It any less, yeah.
It doesn't make it any less real to him, but as a scientifically studiable phenomenon,
it
makes it difficult,
objective.
If not impossible.
Right.
But one of the classic things, and you see in paranormal research a lot, is this association with high EM fields in the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
And people's perceptions of, you know, haunting activity when there's high levels of EMF. You see all the guys on TV walking around with their EMF meters and stuff. Well, really the only research or the only connection between, quote, paranormal and high EM fields is what it does to the human brain.
Right.
You know, I'm a perfect example of that. I've had a spectacular experience during one of our investigations where I had no idea how susceptible I was to a high EM field until I started hallucinating and babbling incoherently. So, you know, a high EM field certainly can influence the human brain. There's been lots of research done on it. Dr. Michael Persinger has done a lot of work. There's been a lot of people that have studied the effects of electromagnetic activity on the brain. So, you know, going back to the Bermuda Triangle, what if there is some sort of a natural explanatory agent that's creating some kind of an EM field
mm-hmm.
that's causing the people to believe that something is happening. You know, that coupled with the sensation of movement at a high rate of speed, especially in an airplane,
right.
you know, maybe that
would
cause someone to have
that.
An experience like that very much.
Well, isn't it the temporal lobe, that the God helmet?
It's the temporal, yeah.
So that's
the God,
same part of the brain
yeah.
that deja vu is linked to, that
right.
All this other stuff. Yeah. And one of the things that it causes is disorientation, right?
Right,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure, it does.
Yeah. True. Well, there's some physical evidence, Larry, for the EM explanation. I don't know if you heard about it, but there's an island in the Bermuda Triangle where they had noticed that these coffins were being moved around. And they thought that somebody might be doing it, but what they did, the mayor, they put the coffins in a certain position within this chamber beneath the ground, and then he sealed the stone casing over it with a seal, like you would seal a letter, so they would know if it was broken. And they waited, and then they broke the seal, went back in, and the coffins were in different parts of the thing, and they hypothesized that it was this very strong EM thing that could move these metal coffins where nobody had been down there. So I think that's pretty good proof that the EM theory about what's happening in the Bermuda Triangle is true.
Well, and if you think about it, you know, taking it one step further, I know this kind of goes off the path of our book, but, you know, it is all kind of related, and it's all pretty damn interesting to talk about. You know, you think about it, you're also flying around in a metal infrastructure. You're flying around in this metal shell. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, metal is going to be highly conductive.
Right.
Same thing with the air, with boats. I mean,
mostly metal, right, the big ones.
Exactly, yeah, they have metal hulls and stuff. So, you know, obviously you've got a strong conductive ability there for an EM field. So,
and
you know, what does that do?
And an EM field doesn't have to be consistent, right? Don't they fluctuate? And
yeah,
they can,
yeah, absolutely.
So in other words, the boat.
All the time on our investigations, we'll see EM fields fluctuate highly, very low to very high.
So that would explain why not every ship or plane that goes through there disappears. There has to be certain environmental whatever in place for the field to hit that point.
Something happening within the environment that's causing that.
Right. So that would explain the erratic nature of what disappears and doesn't disappear there.
And we know from the Philadelphia experiment and the Montauk experiment that high electromagnetic fields may very well warp time.
Right. Yeah, that's what we're writing about right now, right, Larry?
There you go. Segue right into the
cloaking
next book.
And
come back on the show.
Isn't that so funny?
It
all goes back to time.
With the Philadelphia experiment, though, I mean, yeah, it's really cool to talk about it being a time travel experiment and stuff, but, you know, again, not trying to be the debunker, but the facts don't bear that out. I mean, there have been enough people that were involved in the project that are still alive that have actually mentioned, you know, the actual purpose of the people that were in high levels of government position that have actually mentioned. But, I mean, the movie was cool, and, you know, it's kind of cool to
it was actually about cloaking something from sonar.
Yeah, from
and that
right,
we've actually achieved.
Radar invisibility
mm-hmm.
experiment.
Right, and we've actually achieved that now. We've achieved cloaking devices, although they work in the microwave region, but... Yeah, the time element, though, was really based on Tesla's own research. And, you know, it carries on to this day. People are pursuing time travel, even if it's a nanosecond into the future. If we can do that, we can continue.
What's that guy's name? Dr. Ronald Mallett has basically said, you know, if somebody will give him $250,000, he can build a time machine that will transport things at least at the molecular level, but still, I mean, damn, $250,000 really is not that much.
It's not.
And that really is
if I had it, I'd give it to him.
I would too. I can't believe that no one has actually funded that.
Yeah. There's
information that I don't think it's been invented yet, but that the time travel machine, it's information that at CERN there will be overlapping of two singularities, and that when they do that, they will then understand how to do the time travel.
If we don't have create a black hole and blow
and
up
I'll disappear,
everything.
Yeah.
Well, that could happen too.
Yeah.
Well, do you know why they shut down CERN so quickly? Back when was it? In 08?
Well, then they have a. Wasn't there a malfunction?
It was a mechanical thing. I think they when they powered up the outer ring. That there was some kind of was it a freon leak or a hydrogen leak? There was some sort of a leak that I guess it couldn't handle the pressure.
Okay.
Hey, it's up and running now, though.
What's coming out of it? Do we know anything?
That's the thing. It's been running now for what? Over a year, and you don't hear anything about
huge story where they think they discovered something having to do with the Big Bang and... Oh, I'll find the link and send it to you. I think it's just been overshadowed, honestly, by all of the Korea stuff and stupid, trivial Dancing with the Stars. You know, I see these stories, and it's like, why is this number 10 on the trending? And, you know, Dancing with the Stars is number one. America, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look to CERN or something coming out of CERN that may influence science of time travel.
That would be great.
I don't think we have anything yet that is, is really, you know,
no, nothing
reproducible and safe.
Right, but if they would do it soon so we could put it in our book, that would be really cool.
We'll email them and tell them you need it by
Make some phone calls, Larry, come on.
Oh, that's great.
That is
well, I guess, you know, what we should let people know is, number one, to look out for these time warps, because the web bots say they're going to get more common, and that this actually may be part of this shift that we're in, which you've written a book about.
Right.
And that may be, there may be some phenomena that occur. We've noticed some phenomena even in surgery that is very interesting, where kind of as a group you'll get certain, all three of us, for a brief time, less than 5 minutes probably, got very, very cold, which is often associated with interdimensional stuff. If you're a parapsychologist, you know that, the chill. Got very cold, got a little dizzy, and got a little nauseated all at the same time, all three of us.
Huh.
And I think we were in a – I know there's a vortex in the OR because I just know there is. And I think that maybe the energy coming through the vortex shifted just a little bit on the side of being uncomfortable. And three of us experienced it that were right near the vortex, but the people away from the vortex didn't experience anything. So, but I think you're going to see this because according to research done, this vortex is encompasses the planet. You know, there's major points it comes in, probably at the Great Pyramid and at the and other sacred sites, and then there's more minor places it comes in, and then it's like a big grid. So watch watch for changes in the major vortexes. You know, watch for I guess energy surges there.
This thing with the web butt though, I have to ask, how much of it is people reading about it and then perpetuating what is predicted? In other words, self-fulfilling prophecy. You read that there are going to be certain things. If you get enough people to buy into that, they can make it happen. And how much of it is outside influence? That's really interesting to me.
Well, but like what happened, the biggest thing that they predicted happened between the 8th and the 15th, and yet nobody, I mean, it's not known what it is. It's obviously a military secret. So that may not be happening. I mean, that's
well,
evidence
maybe it
that's
didn't
not
happen.
Happening.
Maybe it was avoided somehow. I mean, that would be interesting.
I don't think it was avoided. I think we're going to learn about what it was and how we responded to it, but maybe in the history books. But no, I think that a lot of what the web bots is doing is very interesting to compare it against the other prophecy methods, you know, the Hopi and the Christian and the Jewish prophecies. I mean, there's all sorts of traditions of prophecy.
Right.
That are actually very accurate in many cases.
I think a lot of times the ones that aren't accurate, Nostradamus, for example, I think they may be seeing potential futures.
Oh, they did, and we changed it.
And, you know, yeah.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
So here we are saying, oh, he's an idiot. Nothing
he
said came
through,
and yet...
Right.
He was seeing potentiality.
True.
Yeah.
It's just that the web bots aren't as much prophecy as they are just a technology.
Right.
So
I would agree
with you for prophecy. You know, the best prophet is a false prophet, one in which we change the future because
we
got warning.
Right.
Right.
But the web bots, I'm not sure it's prophecy.
I think it's tapping into the collective unconscious. That's exactly what it was meant to do in a technological sense. What is the collective unconscious thinking about?
Yeah, but I don't think enough of the people consciously know about it. I mean, to make a difference.
Would you say, Larry?
After you mentioned the web bot thing, and I looked it up and I started reading about it, it looks like the way that it operates is actually fairly simple. It basically, you know what a bot is, right, on the internet,
like a
Google bot. Okay, well, what it looks like the technology that these folks have had, which it also looks like they charge you for their predictions, but it looks like they've created something very similar to that, like Google, where it goes out and it searches websites.
Like a spider?
Their technology, from what I'm reading on their website, looks, it goes out on the web and it looks for keywords. It looks for certain words that are being used.
Right.
And then it takes those words in, and it basically there's some algorithm that it has. Based on those words, it spits out a prediction based on the number of occurrences of those words. So basically, the more people that talk about something, the more likely it is that it's going to show up on the web hot. So if you've got 5 billion websites out there talking about Bristol Palin being kicked off of Dancing with the Stars, you're going to have a web bot prediction that's going to have something similar to that. It's going to have some sort of a verbiage with that stuff in there.
And I really think that is proof it's tapping into the collective unconscious, right?
Yeah, but
absolutely. Yeah,
the interpretation. Yeah, the interpretation can be a problem though. There was a prediction back when that there was a vice president and a shooting. And so everybody assumed
the vice president was going to get shot,
but instead he shot somebody
else. It was Dick Cheney? Oh, that is hilarious. Yeah, see, that's what we all think
of. That was a web bot prediction that the vice president was going to get shot, but they came back on and said, well, we just have these words.
Vice president, we actually put them together, and what's more logical. And that shows you how interpretation with any
of
this gets...
But that's why it's not prophecy. It's really not prophecy. Prophecy
is certainly
different.
It's more prediction.
In big letters on their website, it says that it's for entertainment only.
Exactly. And it is very entertaining.
I'm
going to
start looking at it more often. And I just find that intriguing. I really do.
Yeah, it really is.
This is actually really interesting. This is almost as addicting, I think, as the peopleofwalmart.com website.
Are the two related?
I don't know, but this is something I can see spending a lot of time wasting.
Yes. Oh boy, you've turned Larry on to something. Now he's never going to be around. Oh boy.
That's right. Well, listen, we're approaching the end of our hour. We've been having a great interview with Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman on the Deja Vu Enigma, A Journey Through the Anomalies of Mind, Memory, and Time. I highly recommend this book. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And you all have to promise me you'll come back with your time travel book.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
If we're still here. if we're all still here.
If the earth is still here.
Yeah, there you go.
That's great.
Right.
Well, next week we have, Tricia McCannon, Jesus, the Explosive Story of the 30 Lost Years of the Ancient Mystery Religions. This is Tricia's a friend of mine, so I'm having her on for the second time because the first time she only gave me half the book. So I interviewed her half the book. It's a great book. It's all about Jesus' early
years. The Lost Years.
Then after, on the 11th, we have John Boyk back. He wrote Natural Compounds in Cancer Therapy, one of the best natural things on cancer treatment, and John was a research fellow at the MD Anderson. He's talking about a cancer drug discovery using natural product mixtures.
Oh, wow.
He's also a traditional Chinese medicine master.
Huh.
Then on the 18th, Jeremy Taylor, The Wisdom of Your Dreams, Using Dreams to Tap into Your Unconscious and Transform Your Life, and then I would add maybe figure out what's going to happen in 2011 and 12 and 13. So anyway, I hope you'll come back and we'll have another great hour to talk about all these fascinating subjects and just see what comes up.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
That's great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health. Join us next week.